From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, some state lawmakers are talking about leaving session early. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the possibility of legalizing recreational marijuana in New York. And we'll have reaction to a national summit on PFAS chemicals held in Washington, D.C. this week that has impact on New York. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The New York legislative session is due to end in 3 weeks, and some state lawmakers believe they will accomplish so little in that time that they're talking about leaving a week early. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports on what can and can't get done.
Political gridlock in the state Senate and worsening relations between Governor Andrew Cuomo and majority party Senate Republicans has led some lawmakers to say that perhaps they should end the session early. But Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says his Democratic members are staying until at least June 20th, the scheduled end of the session.
I would say at this moment I don't see the necessity to end the session early. There are a lot of bills that members want to get done.
Senate Democratic Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says her conference will also remain.
We have a schedule that's been planned, and I want to stay here and push for the people of New York. That's what they expect.
But the Senate is gridlocked with 31 members in each of two factions. 32 members are needed to form a majority in the chamber. 31 Democrats all now meet together under Stewart-Cousins. One Democrat, Senator Simca Felder, meets with the 30 Republicans. The Senate had 31 Republicans, giving them their 32-seat majority, but one GOP Senator, Tom Croce, left earlier this month for active military service. Senate Democrats tried to force some action and proposed a hostile amendment that would enact the Women's Reproductive Health Act. It would, among other things, codify the abortion rights provisions in the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision into New York state law. Abortion has been legal in New York since 1970. Andrea Miller, president of the National Institute for Reproductive Health, says that's led to a false sense of security, though, because she says the 48-year-old laws are outdated.
We don't have the right laws in the right places. We treat abortion as a crime still in our criminal code instead of the health code where it belongs. We don't allow the kinds of advanced practice clinicians who can, based on their training and scope of practice, offer care. And we don't fully ensure that birth control is affordable and accessible to everyone.
Miller came to the Capitol to push for the measure. Susan Lerner with the government reform group Common Cause says there is a way the deadlock could be broken. Democrats and Republicans could actually get together to vote on bills that they agree on, something she says seldom happens in Albany.
Reaching across the aisle and deciding what the consensus is on issues that both parties talk about and actually passing things that the people of New York need.
She says there are other unresolved issues as well, including election reform and early voting, bail reform, and the Child Victims Act. That would give survivors of childhood sexual abuse greater access to the courts to sue their abusers. Some other items include expanding sports gambling, now that the U.S. Supreme Court has said that states can allow it. And the Cuomo administration's Department of Health is expected to soon release a report detailing how to legalize recreational marijuana in New York. Lerner with Common Cause says if legislators really can't agree on anything, though, they should just end the session.
If they're not going to pass laws, well, then they just ought to be honest and say to the people, we have no intention of doing your business. We're just going to go home. And then let the voters decide.
She says it would save taxpayers the $175 a day that lawmakers receive to cover expenses whenever they are at the Capitol. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, as we just heard from our Karen DeWitt, the New York legislative session, which is due to end in 3 weeks, has some state lawmakers believing they will accomplish so little that they're talking about leaving a week early.
Well, you know, there's always a great deal that can be done. The number one thing that should be done, of course, is an ethics package. These characters aren't passing ethics packages. They're not going to put a prohibition on how long they can be in office. They're not going to put a prohibition on whether they can make outside money. And we all know that's the game, you know, that there's so many of them, not all of them, but so many of them. People go to do business with the senator or with the assemblyman. Come on, folks, it's disgusting. There ought to be initiative and referendum so that people in this state, like other states, like my state of Massachusetts, can put something on the ballot. And if the legislature doesn't do it, the people can do it with a certain number of signatures. There is a reason that so many people are getting into trouble here. There is a good reason, and that is that they just can't get over their power and their ability to make things go in their own personal direction rather than in the people's direction. It's disgusting.
Legalization of marijuana. It's not the first time we've talked about it, but things seem to be moving in New York. We also should note that Massachusetts has it, Vermont has it, Connecticut's exploring it. We know California, Colorado, and what's going on there. Now we hear two parts of this, Alan. First, Governor Cuomo's Department of Health is expected to release a report detailing how to legalize recreational marijuana in New York. And the leader of the assembly, this the second part, Hasty, says any bill to allow that would also need to aid those who were arrested on past marijuana charges. He wants their records expunged.
Well, I think that's reasonable, but we do in many cases change the law. For example, people who have been executed years and years ago in the electric chair in New York, they can't be brought back when you said there's not going to be any more death penalty. However, it does seem reasonable to me that people who are convicted on possession charges on marijuana, because we do know that people of color suffer the worst because they can't smoke dope on the 16th floor of their Fifth Avenue apartment out of sight. So we do know that this has been an unfairly administered law. Look, this is not going to be perfect. Andrew Cuomo was against it until he had some political opposition from Cynthia Nixon, and all of a sudden he's in the pro-legalization part. Look, alcohol is legal, and it kills more people than you could possibly even want to think about. Some of that's going to happen with marijuana. Are you kidding? Somebody's going to drive drunk or impaired behind a vehicle, but the same thing happens with alcohol. You got to have strict laws. You got to make sure you enforce them. You got to make sure that people know that if they drive in an impaired way and the rest of it, they're going to jail, and not for 6 months. If they kill, that is a terrible thing, and there's always a problem with drugs of any kind, that there will be some abusers who abuse.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A national summit on PFAS chemicals was held in Washington, D.C. last week, convened by the Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt. The two-day event sought input on pollution, including PFOA and PFOS, which have been discovered in several communities in upstate New York. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard has reaction.
The EPA released a four-step action plan to address the contamination that has been discovered in communities like Hoosick Falls and Petersburg, New York, and Bennington, Vermont. The steps are as follows. 1. EPA will initiate steps to evaluate the need for a maximum contaminant level for PFOA and PFOS. 2. EPA is beginning the necessary steps to propose designated PFOA and PFOS as hazardous substances. 3. EPA is currently developing groundwater cleanup recommendations for PFOA and PFOS. And four, EPA is taking action in close collaboration with federal and state partners to develop toxicity values for Gen X and PFBS. Representatives from state governments dealing with the issue were among those invited. Select reporters like CNN and the AP were not allowed into the summit. Vermont Agency of Natural Resources Deputy Secretary Peter Walk traveled to Washington. Nobody from Bennington, where PFOA has been discovered in private wells, was invited.
Those communities who have been living this crisis really need to be heard and have the opportunity to pass on what they've learned and what their experiences are.
The state of Vermont is among entities seeking maximum contaminant levels for chemicals like PFOA and PFOS. Vermont has set its own action level for the contaminants at 20 parts per trillion. EPA has a health advisory level at 70 parts per trillion. New York has adopted the 70 parts per trillion threshold for communities like Hoosick Falls and Petersburg. An EPA press release announced that listening sessions would be held in states affected by PFAS contamination, including New Hampshire and Michigan. Hoosick Falls Mayor Rob Allen attended the summit with an assist from EPA Region 2 Administrator Pete Lopez. Lopez traveled to the Rensselaer County Village in recent weeks to meet with the mayor and affected residents. Allen sat down with Administrator Pruitt during the Washington event.
He listened. I communicated a little bit about the Hoosick Falls experience that we've had, how it's been an emotional roller coaster, but how we've also been focused on getting some goals for not just our village, but for the national conversation that seems to have finally arrived about this class of chemicals.
The summit came after a report was published in Politico on May 14th showing federal officials sought to suppress a study into PFAS chemicals, fearing a public relations nightmare. Allen said Administrator Pruitt told him that he was not aware of the federal study. Former EPA Region 2 Administrator Judith Enck, a regular voice on WAMC, says that may be true.
But it was his staff that were trying to sink the study. And as soon as he read the article, he should have called the staff in. He should have considered firing them, which he didn't do, of course. And he should have said, you know, take your foot off of the study. Let's get it out there so the public has the information.
As the EPA says it will travel to affected communities, Enck says the regional administrators can play an important role in gathering information. She believes, however, that enough information is out there for EPA to act swiftly in setting a maximum contaminant level and labeling PFAS chemicals as hazardous substances.
I mean, I'm quite disappointed that the agency is using language like they're going to initiate steps to evaluate the need for a maximum contaminant level. I mean, that's been happening at EPA for over 10 years, so there's nothing new there.
Asked by WAMC if New York would be added to the list of future site visits, EPA responded with a statement saying it's, quote, in the process of identifying states and communities for the upcoming community engagement process, end quote. For more stories on PFOA and PFOS in our region, visit WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
The Sage Colleges of the Capital Region of New York's credit rating has dropped to the lowest among private institutions in the nation. That's according to a leading rating agency. WAMC's Elizabeth Hill reports.
Moody's Investors Service provides credit ratings, research tools, and analysis to approximately 500 public and private higher education institutions. In March, Moody's downgraded the Sage Colleges from B3 to CAA1. Student enrollment continued to decline at the college, made up of two campuses in Albany and Troy, and the school extended credit lines to cover operational costs over the last 2 years. Moody's Assistant Vice President Pranav Sharma.
Most of the revenue for college comes from student enrollment. And this was the second year in a row where the college had enrollment decline of 7% or higher. And if they're not able to adjust their expenses, it will result in decline in operating income and cash flows.
Sage has also had turnover in several leadership positions, including president, CFO, and the head of enrollment. Dr. Christopher Ames was inaugurated as president in October and believes the college is heading in the right direction.
We had not kept up as effectively with new methods of recruiting students, and we've made dramatic changes there this year, and we're seeing that in practically double the number of applications and a very large increase in deposits for fall. We have 515 deposits today, and as opposed to about 266 at the same day last year.
Moody's says only two other institutions have ever received a rating as low: Dowling College on Long Island and Birmingham Southern in Alabama. Dowling, which received the rating of CAA1 in 2012, has since entered forbearance, lost accreditation, and closed. Birmingham Southern, which was downgraded to CAA1 in 2011, has since begun a slow recovery and as of June 2017, has been upgraded to B3. Sharma says the high concentration of colleges and universities in the capital region is a challenge for Sage.
Then you have SUNY, which is a low-price competitor with significant economies of scale. So that's not the competition you want to have.
Roughly 90% of Sage's incoming freshmen are New York State residents. The report highlights the Excelsior Scholarship, which makes SUNY tuition-free for some New York families and has been criticized by many private schools. However, Dr. Ames says he is not worried. He says private institutions have always had to compete with cheaper state schools and have unique offerings.
The Excelsior has been like 18 months of advertising for the SUNY system, and that's a little difficult for those of us who are in the privates, and I wouldn't say it'll have no effect. It probably will have some. We do stress to our applicants that, you know, the aid we provide, though it, you know, it requires full-time attendance and maintaining a good GPA, does not have restrictions on where you work and live after you graduate.
Moody's reports next to the enrollment declines, the college's liquidity is another challenge that needs to be addressed. Again, Sharma.
Sage has had a very low liquidity for a while, and it's very heavily reliant on an external line of credit to fund its operations and for the working capital needs.
In 2017, Sage had an operating deficit of more than 10%, and the college's operating cash flow did not cover debt service. Therefore, the college increased its annual line of credit from $7 million to $8.5 million. Dr. Ames says extending the line of credit is not an option for this year.
The reaction to the budgetary problems last year, but we've addressed that. The dual focus that we've had this year has been reducing expenses and increasing enrollment, and we've made great progress on both of those.
Sharma says there are many variables to consider, and it is too soon to tell if the school's recruitment strategy will result in stabilization. I'm Elizabeth Hill.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. The mayor of Quebec's third largest city was in Plattsburgh recently to re-sign a declaration of cooperation between the two cities. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
During a luncheon, Plattsburgh Mayor Colin Reed and Longueuil, Quebec Mayor Sylvie Parent formally continued a partnership established between the two cities in 2015. Plattsburgh North Country Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Gary Douglas says both Longueuil and Plattsburgh are hubs in the rapidly growing binational New York-Quebec economic corridor.
We both are progressively outward-looking communities, globally aware, hosting global businesses, feeding international markets with a very international perspective on our business communities and from our business communities. And we both are key centers for transportation equipment and aerospace, very much a part of what we again believe very much to be increasingly a binational cluster. That is why Plattsburgh and Longueuil, that's why we want to continue to build this relationship.
Since the first formal agreement was signed 3 years ago, regular so-called rendezvous Longueuil-Plattsburgh have occurred. Longay Mayor Parent explained that her city is seeking cross-border opportunities.
We plan to set up a techno city that will be a hub for high technology industries, research centers, businesses, and financial institutions. Our goal is to create an ecosystem to jumpstart innovation and economic growth in our community.
The group from Quebec met with officials from educational institutions in the area, including the Institute for Advanced Manufacturing at Clinton Community College. Longay International Business Development Director Stefan Falliker says education is key to successful cross-border development.
We do think, in a sense, that the basis of relation is linked to education. That's the foundation. Companies actually did come and go here, but I think the next frontier will be the talent, having the right people to do the right things. And that's the reason why we wanted to bring them in. That's the reason why actually we're interested. Actually, it was interesting to learn the fact that there might be some collaboration between them on the collegial level, but also at the university level. I think we need both to be able actually to strive. And that's going on, so it's a good base.
Following comments from officials, Douglas called on Mayor Parent and Plattsburgh Mayor Reed to sign the updated partnership agreement. New York State Senator Betty Little and Assemblyman D. Billy Jones signed as witnesses.
I'll now ask both mayors to join one another as they sign an updated, fresh agreement of cooperation and partnership between the City of Longueuil and the City of Plattsburgh.
I can sign in English and French.
Okay.
Reed notes there are very few places in the U.S. with opportunities like this.
They're really at the same place in trying to develop their downtown, and they're trying to attract the same sort of cross-section of industries to their region as we are here. And we really see an awful lot of opportunities to work together, and that we can only gain from collaboration.
Mayor Parent added that there are numerous similarities between the cities, despite their difference in size.
We work hard for the transportation, for the manufacturing, and for the development. Our cities, Plattsburgh and Longueuil, we are close. We are so close, and we have the same vision of the development. So we have to work together. We have the geography, and historically, we have the same base. And so this is easy to work all together.
The agreement calls for shared aims, development, and promotion of the transportation equipment and aerospace clusters between the two cities. Longueuil is on the southeast bank of the St. Lawrence River across from Montreal, with a population of 400,000. Plattsburgh is about 20 miles south of the Canadian border. The city's population is about 19,000.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1822. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.